When it comes to commercial banking, relationships matter. At Associated Bank, we've got you. With a dedicated team of relationship managers helping you secure financing to best serve you today and tomorrow. Visit associatedbank.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
It is Thought Leader Thursday here on the Opening Bell. We do that every Thursday here with the new thought leader every week, talking about all kinds of things. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about yesterday's decision by the Federal Reserve to leave interest rates unchanged and the economy. Rod Murray is here from Associated Bank. Rod is the group SVP for commercial banking and head of Leveraged Finance Group at Associated Bank. Rod, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Thanks. Good morning, Steve.
You're all smiles this morning. Like a lot of folks, you must be very happy with the way things are going with the economy right now.
Yeah, right now, you know, nothing to complain about on the present state. It's what's the future look like are the unknowns and the uncertain pieces.
What are people happy about right now?
Unemployment or lack thereof. Mm-hmm. GDP numbers were obviously strong. You still have some availability of credit that is in abundance. And, you know, in general, you know, there you can't find something that you can point to and say, gee, it's going to turn tomorrow. It's just tomorrow's tomorrow.
As we speak, the Federal Reserve decision has just been down. No new rate hike this time around, but they still say we're on track for one every couple months.
Right.
How will that impact things?
Well, I think that the markets have already built that in. You know, so unless there's a change in their either the verbiage that's behind the rate increases or something happens that they increase it by more or less than what the markets are currently predicting. Otherwise, I think that the yield curve has built that into both the market and the interest rate sensitivity and the pricing.
I bet you get to talk to some CEOs on occasion. What are they telling you about their long-range plans and their long-range concerns?
Sure. CEOs, CFOs, right, the C-suite, their long-range plans are that they are talking about spending more money. They are looking at M&A. They are looking at continuing invest in their own businesses. That's really great. So those are the good pieces. Their concerns are the labor market, especially if they're serving the skilled and underskilled labor market, that there's a big shortage right now, you know, to find help because of what we just talked about. The unemployment rate is so low. Everybody that wants a job pretty much has one.
Are there any solutions for that? The rest of the crowd that may be out there that we could pull from for employment? Is it retraining? Are there other solutions that we can find to get more people working?
Yeah, there's been some interesting things in talking to your point, some of our clients, is different things. One is you're seeing apprenticeship programs come back, and you're seeing, you know, them look hard at just their overall wage piece. And I mean, right? I mean, we all work for a reason, which is a living. So looking hard at what the wage is, the wage growth, you know, is one of the things we didn't touch on that hasn't grown at the pace that the GDP has. So those are some things that they're doing, be more creative. Something that we've seen that I think is also kind of brilliant is going back to the co-ops. I mean, think about, you know, you and I are close to the same age. Think about how popular the co-op system was before. You know, and again, invest in our young people and get them interested and get them skilled and looking for a skill at a younger age.
Yeah. Let's talk about a couple of topics that we've kind of been following. We've had conversations before here on the Thought Leader about fintechs, financial tech firms, financial technical firms, or the technology, financial technology. And this new report says that the Midwest is increasingly the place where they are coming to start up, to plant their seeds and grow. That's kind of exciting.
That is exciting, and you know, we'll touch on, there was an article just this week as well from the Treasury Department that is really going to kind of feed this in a little bit more. But yeah, in the Midwest, you know, there's a cost of living component that's down. You know, there's definitely a talent pool here in the Midwest. People are here and people want to be here. So the fact that it's coming in or they're starting it a little more is that's bullish. Where the issue is on the capital. That's what they need to do it. Yeah. And as we read in that article, you know, there's a plentiful venture capital, but 75% of it is centered in three states, you know, California, New York, and Massachusetts.
And we've heard, too, just outside of fintech, a lot of startups complaining about this, that the money in the Midwest doesn't seem to be as plentiful elsewhere. How does that change?
Well, you know, the Treasury Department, what they just released this week, that could change things. You know, we'll see. I think they released 80 recommendations, you know, some of which could help spur that, including some you know, the ability to regulate or other things deregulate, you know, kind of calling it, I think the term that they used is creating a sandbox for these fintech startups. Mm-hmm. So that's a way it could change. It still could have some issues with the states on certain components of that, on what the states are going to fight it. But a few of these things, you know, of the 80, you know, what number of them go through, that might open up some capital and open up some, you know, growth in the fintech space.
The article we pulled this topic from was in AmericanBanker.com. And the story highlighted how incubators, fintech incubators, are also helping to launch some of these companies. Techstars Chicago was one of the ones mentioned. And then they highlighted a couple of different cities. I mean, there's also one in South Bend, Indiana, but Des Moines, Kansas City, Missouri. I'm guessing that smaller towns, smaller Midwestern towns, perhaps Minneapolis is in that. So it's good for the Midwest.
It is good for the Midwest. You know, you... what we forget living in Chicago and being Chicago here sometimes is, you know, there's a need for homes that aren't, you know, at the price that they are here and in the collar counties. And people need dollar amounts, you know, to buy a home of $50,000, $60,000 mm-hmm. or less. And where do you go for that? And these fintechs, you know, can create a more smooth position for it and availability of money at a price that it doesn't become as cost prohibitive if you have to go, you know, compete with the bigs.
Yeah, and I think the one, the fintech you're talking about is called Hurry Home. Mm-hmm. It's a service that allows, that puts renters on track to become homeowners. Boy, I wish that were around when I was renting, because it took a long time to save up the down payment to buy a house.
I didn't think we had to ever buy one.
Yeah. So companies like that are finding it useful. What is the opportunity here for a bank like Associated?
Well, I think that the opportunity for banks are, you know, I'm going to tie it back to what the Treasury Department just put out. They're trying to allow some easing up to have banks partner with some of the fintech startups. And that's a good move, because you can't just ignore it. You have to, you know, it is easier maybe than starting from scratch to invest your own fintech if you have the entrepreneurs that have done it. So to banks like Associated, and you know, I know they talked about, you know, the big banks partnering up, but I think more of the regional banks, mm-hmm. you know, like Associated in that size, can and should, you know, figure out ways to take advantage of partnering with them and investing in them as well.
Yeah, because you, I mean, you hear, you guys are in Wisconsin and Illinois. You've got a nice footprint on the whole Midwest there, the big parts of the Midwest.
Right, the original Big Ten world. Yeah.
When you talk about partnering, I know that we've had conversations before about banks buying some of these fintechs. Would partnering be something different than buying them? It would be actually working side by side, perhaps in some sort of partnership agreement, or how would that work?
Yeah, you know, this is just, you know, my guess is that it could be one or the other. I think that the better thing would be to buy it, because you need, you know, you have to get it under your umbrella to bring it in from the regulatory. There's still all of your, you know your customer rules that are important. Know your client, know your customer, know your beneficiary. So I think that an acquisition makes more sense, but it doesn't mean that you couldn't figure out how to, you know, walk before you run in that space.
Yeah, and certainly if these incubators and others are sort of sowing these seeds and watering them like a nice garden, that it presents the future potential for mergers and acquisitions and other partnerships in the future with some of these companies.
Right. I mean, it can be a win-win for all the parties.
Yeah. And speaking of the Midwest, there's another report that talks about how the folks who are doing mergers and acquisitions, the folks with really deep pockets, have opted to start coming to the Midwest more often for some of these deals.
Yeah, I think that, you know, referred to as M&A rainmakers or merger and acquisition rainmakers, right? The big investment banks are coming. The boutiques have been here for a long time in the Chicago, in the heartland, in the Midwest, and doing well. But you're seeing more of the New York firms and San Francisco firms, et cetera, come here to get closer to their client. It makes sense. It doesn't mean that they weren't here before, but I think that there's just been more of a focus and some heavier hiring going on.
Are we talking about the firms like Goldman Sachs, the bigger?
Right, the Goldmans. The Goldmans of the world are the ones that are the bigger ones that have started coming into Chicago.
This obviously puts a lot of things at play in the Midwest. One of the cities, the two of the cities they talked about, Chicago and St. Louis. But what does this do for Associated?
Well, I think that to the extent that we can, you know, network with these, you know, companies and make sure that we're a known commodity, right? Just like they're coming in, They're coming in because there are deals here. Also, every bank is here in Chicago. It's one of the most overbanked cities in the United States, if not the most. Right. So it's just being a leader in the space and having the bank positioned, you know, to lend into it. You know, some of what they deal with are going to be really large dollar amount deals. You know, the boutiques are more who, you know, some of the regionals play with versus the, you know, the large. But, you know, certainly anywhere where opportunity knocks, you know, we're going to open the door.
I've always heard people when I ask them, why doesn't Chicago get the pub that other places get, that they say, well, we kind of keep our nose down. We try to stay off the radar because we don't want people coming in and crowding us out. That seems to be exactly what's happening here, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, they'll chase a little bit up market, but mm-hmm. you know, at some point, if the activity slows down, you're going to look at the entire market. So yeah, it could get a little bit overcrowded. I think that the more nimble you are, Chicago and the Midwest still is an area that is very, you know, look, the dollar rules, but at the same time, there's who are you, where are you, and what's the relationship, and what's the value that you add? So they'll have to cover both ends. It's not just, hey, I'm the biggest.
So if you have the rainmakers coming in, does it mean that there's rain to follow? I mean, are you hearing anything about some big Midwestern M&A activity coming, or no?
Well, we've seen it for the last couple of years, actually. Certainly in our book, you know, we deal mostly in the middle market space, and we've seen a fair amount of it over the last 2 years, and still seeing a little bit of that. I don't think that the boat has been missed. I think that there's still, you know, ripe activity. You know, I think that I know that I just read a couple of bank earnings calls from regionals and saying, right, they felt the same thing, that their loan growth might have stymied even though they're putting on new deals because their middle market C&I deals are getting, you know, kind of swallowed up by the big corporate activity. So there's still more to be had on that. The multiples are still strong. We talked about the availability of credit. You know, it's just when are the owners or the stockholders or shareholders of a given company looking to take money off the table or completely exit?
Yeah. We've also had conversations before about blockchain and some of these coin offerings and how this is moving into banking. I think it's finally happened in a big way. In China, the Agricultural Bank of China has issued a $300,000 loan using blockchain.
Yes, it's here. It sounds like a big loan, you know, for purposes of Agricultural Bank of China is the third largest bank in the world at $2.6 trillion. So that kind of gives you some scale of what that $300,000 loan is to them. However, it's here, you know, so they're probably the most aggressive country. I still think that the U.S. is going to be behind in that a little bit and not be as quick as China is. But here you go. It's out there and it's starting to happen.
$300,000 is the tip of a pin to this bank. That's just by design, right? I mean, because if it goes bad, obviously you don't want to lose a lot of money, but this is an experiment. It looks and sounds like an experiment.
It is. And they started experimenting a little bit, the ABC Bank in China, on some smaller, even unsecured deals. You know, this one is a little bit bigger. I don't think it specifically says who it's to, but the idea is to opening up where they are to, you know, to rural companies and, you know, large farmers, et cetera, to give them access to some capital that they otherwise wouldn't be able to get.
It's interesting, too, reading some of the details about how all this came about. It seems like at least parts of it look and feel like a regular loan. They used a piece of agricultural land as collateral. They had a regular, you know, you mentioned the farmer, the farm that they did. So those things sound like a normal loan. What is it you think that they're trying to do here that would be different?
It uses this distributed ledger and it gets, right, we know it gets kind of complicated. I still don't completely understand it. But they use this distributed ledger to track, you know, the data, to track the collateral. And it also is a way to eliminate, you know, fraud. I mean, they talk about eliminating double pledging, et cetera. So those are the advantages to them.
What is it that you're looking for from these experiments? And you mentioned that it's not going to happen in America anytime soon. What would cause it to happen here? What are you looking for to see?
Well, we'll look to see what their success is. Does it go, you know, spread throughout that market first, Europe? And when I say it won't happen in the U.S. anytime soon, I mean, I don't see it in the next year or two, but who knows? I mean, some of the banks could start experimenting in a really small beta phase like this as well. So it'll look to what the what the success is. I still, right, my theme is always, do you have the gaps or the change around it to keep fraud out? And that's specifically what they say the advantage is, you know, but the proof will be in the pudding on that. Does it really work? And is it something that's sustainable from keeping the hackers out of? Yeah. And that's what their whole idea is. So we'll see how it goes.
And does a bank have that infrastructure to even do this? I mean, like if you wanted to at Associated Bank right now, could you do a blockchain loan? Could you even?
No.
Yeah.
No, and I mean, from several standpoints, right? The technology, the you know, the regulatory side of things. How do you monitor it? How do you build it? How do you administer it, right?
Rod, always good chatting with you. We'll see you again next time.
All right, sounds great. Thanks, Steve.
Rod Murray is the Group SVP for Commercial Banking and head of the Leverage Finance Group at Associated Bank. It's our thought leader conversation. We do it every Thursday here on The Opening Bell. Remember, you can listen to our past conversations at WGNradio.com. On the Opening Bell page, follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter. And you can head over to their website, too, associatedbank.com/thoughtleadership, to meet more of our thought leaders and hear more conversations there as well.